Welcome to another episode of GT Radio. And tonight we have an amazing guest with us. He's a good friend. He has a pretty amazing story. Please welcome Scott Chira. How are you, Scott?
Tino, I'm great. Thank you very much. And thank you for the invitation. I know we've been, it hasn't been the easiest connection to get me on the show, but I appreciate your perseverance and thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Scott, when we spoke, I was not expecting the stories that you told me. So you lived kind of a transient life with your mom because she worked the cruise lines, right? And give us a sense what year it was and what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 60-second plus me is that, I'm born in Minnesota. My father's a tribal member. I'm a tribal member. My mom wasn't. They ended up going in different directions, and I ended up, I think all of like whatever it was, a year or two old with my mom, and we ended up in Texas and lived outside of Dallas and Irving, Texas for a couple years. And I, as you just mentioned, my mom was became a server on an old luxury liner crew called the Matson Liner, and she would sail, so I lived with my sister and I lived with my grandmother. And they would, the ship would sail out for, and this was the age of the big cruises, like down to Australia, 14,
yeah.
21 days, then to Asia, and they were gone. She was gone 6 to 8 weeks at a pop and would come, back to port for a week and gone again. So, and then we, my grandmother, we packed up and ended up moving to L.A., and then my mom was sailing out of Los Angeles. And, again, we were still living with my grandmother. And, my mom got married and got out of the business, and we bounced
and
back
and
forth.
You kept doing that for a while, bopping around, right? Because she'd be working at a different ports, right? So
you'd
have to live in different cities. And you grew up like that, right?
Oh, yeah, all over the country.
All over
the 14 states, I think before I turned 18.
Wow, man, that's amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I know that I've heard some pretty incredible stories on the show about how people got into the business. but you have the most amazing story. So I want you to tell how that happened.
Well,
and you were what, 14? You were 14?
Yeah. Exactly. And it was 1974. It was a really tough economy. And we were, my mom and her boyfriend then were on welfare in the Twin Cities and Minneapolis, St. Paul. And my mom decided she wanted to move back to San Francisco. And, again, in the worst economy at that time, right during the first oil crisis. Anyway, in that process, they wanted to get jobs and this and that. It didn't work out. We ended up literally living in the back of a U-Haul for 3 months on the beach in San Francisco. And, when my mom and her boyfriend put their heads together, they said, out of all the places we've been, it felt like the best prospects for employment was in Reno. We loaded up the RV. Loaded up the U-Haul. I affectionately call an RV, and made that trudge back to Reno. Pulled into the parking lot at Boomtown, the truck stop at that time. It was predominantly a truck stop in 1974. And my mom literally walked in the building, got a job, and her boyfriend got a job, and I started as a bus boy within a couple weeks, and started school at Reno High School.
And that's how you got into the business, literally.
That
amazing.
Literally was my start in the industry.
Yeah, and that was at 14, and you'd already started working and starting to understand hospitality. Let me ask you something. You had a lot of life experiences before and moving around and, all that stuff. How do you think that helped you?
Well, it really impressed upon me now. My wife, Nola, and I have been married for 35 years this June. I have to tell you, I was absolutely determined that I was not going to put my children through what I you know, the childhood that I had. And I think towards that end, my wife and I were very, very successful. We have three great daughters that live. One lives in Tucson, one lives in Baltimore, Maryland, one lives just outside of Anchorage, Alaska. So they're very comfortable, and they're doing, two of them have MBAs, and the other one is working on hers now. So anyway, we wanted that stability, that one component that, you know, that I didn't have, that I really, in my heart, I actually yearn for quite a lot. And, you know, that's been, and, you know, how that translates into the work environment is, you know, I, at the end of the day, even though I'm, you know, given my age, I'm just, you know, close to 60.
Yes.
I've been very, very blessed. I've only had, you know, five jobs. So I want people to feel comfortable with me and the employees that work where I work. I want them to feel comfortable in their environment. That's, you know, very, very important to me.
Yeah. So you like longevity. You like to put in stints at places and not just bop around.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, if you're going to accomplish, you know, you're going to have a positive, you know, paying it forward type of experience with the employees that you work with, have the opportunity to mentor employees that you work with, you really have to have that kind of, that connection. And the only way you get it, in my at least in my experience, is over time. Yeah, you can have some very, you know, impactful shared experiences, but it takes time to have that level of trust where that I think that you can, you know, have then develop that synergistic relationship of accomplishing, you know, when two people can accomplish more than three people would.
Tell us a little bit about the early days in Reno, in Boomtown. What was it like?
It was great. I mean, you know, it was, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, in that it was in the early 70s that, you know, Las Vegas and Reno were kind of still very much neck and neck as far as revenue. In fact, right up until then, it took until the 70s before Las Vegas actually passed Reno in gross gaming revenue. And, you know, and of course, they definitively have, you know, different population bases, feeder markets that they were drawing from. But I think more importantly, Las Vegas definitely took a different track than Reno. Reno became a little more, a little more conservative about growth. And, you know, that was their choice. And, you know, and that's evolved now. But, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, it was great. I mean, it was where I imprinted. So it has, you know, obviously extraordinary meaning to me. And the experiences I shared, I was, like I said, I was blessed. I spent 25 years at one property there. I got to know people like, you know, literally like you're married to them.
Yeah, you got to know them really well.
Yeah, and, you know, we ended up, a lot of us, you know, with the growth of gaming. And, you know, we were there through that transition from, you know, the owner at the time, a fellow named Bob Cashel, and, you know, his A-team, great guys, you know, that I worked with, Jimmy Meadow, Steve Stewart, a whole bunch of really high quality, Dick Scott, high quality folks that we were blessed to work with. And, you know, they gave a lot of authority to, you know, develop people from within. I have to tell you, you know, on the corporate side, it's very much, Darwinistic. You know, you just don't,
right.
you know, there's nobody, you know, knighting you for a position. You earn it, and they make you earn it. And I don't see that it has been any different since I left.
right.
Yeah,
no, that's correct. So you worked at Boomtown, and you worked there for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 25 years.
25 years. So you came into the business from the commercial end, and you basically learned everything from a commercial standpoint, right? Because you were in one of the major Vegas centers. Not Vegas, but you were in major Nevada centers.
Yeah. Well, and like to your point earlier, you know, at the time that I started in the industry, Atlantic City hadn't even started gaming yet. So it was definitively Nevada still had exclusivity until 1978 when Atlantic City voted it in. And then soon thereafter, you know, it started proliferating, and you know, the Iowa and Mississippi, and then, you know, getting into the late 80s, you know, the with the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, it started, you know, it started its march across the country, both corporate and in Native American country.
Yeah, exactly. What did those days in Boomtown teach you? That 25 years, what are the fundamental things that you learned that you took with you?
Numbers. It really, you know, I found that the, you know, like I said, it was a very Darwinistic environment. But I found the people that were good with numbers seemed to perform the best, and, you know, i.e. get the best rewards, or the most generous rewards and whatnot. And I think so, and because Reno had such a seasonal market, you know, it went from that, you know, the peak season, the traditional peak season of Memorial Day to Labor Day, you know, so they garnered that market. Washoe Valley, Reno area garnered probably, I don't know what the number is, maybe between 60 to 70% of the revenue that they would generate in a year was generated in those 4 months between,
right,
you know, maybe June, July, and August, September, 5 months.
Right.
And, you know, so you really had to be very fiscally conservative those other 7 months, you know, and you had to become very disciplined about that. And I think that that's something that actually is a really hard lesson to learn. It takes a while to, you know, not just get that imprinted, but really get, you know, kind of it becomes part of your DNA. Your management DNA. And then, you know, again, I was fortunate. I didn't start off in the gaming industry. I started off in the fuel services. Boomtown was known as a truck stop and then became a casino. And I ended up running the fuel services division for a number of years. And so, you know, it wasn't just counting pennies. It was counting, you know, literally tenths of a cent. And anyway, I had a lot of numbers that I was dealing with all of the time. That was my day in, day out job. And, you know, and it what became important to me, you know, I think the biggest takeaway was not just the data itself, but converting the data into actionable information. So converting data into key performance indicators, you know, KPIs, and then putting that in the context that, you know, became actionable, that, you know, so if I wanted, you know, something, whether it was a capital expense item or whatever it was, it was very helpful to have really easy to understand information so that the executives, you didn't have to waste a lot of time explaining it. It was very, the numbers and the key performance indicators really told their own story without having to rely on a narrative, which is always viewed upon a little skeptically.
Yeah, that's right. So the truck stop became a casino, right?
It did. It did evolve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the truck stop.
So you started there with the truck stop, and then you transitioned.
Well, I started off as a busboy, and I found that very quickly that food and beverage was not for me. I wanted to be a little bit freer. I wanted to work outside, so I transitioned over to the truck stop, and, you know, I spent 18, you know, wonderful years in that department. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with gaming. It wasn't, I think, you know, that stereotype, and I worked at a casino. It's not like, you know, I was hypocritical. I guess I am a little bit. I was a little hypocritical at the time, but, you know, I just thought that in my mind, the people that worked in gaming were a little bit, you know, a little pompous and a little arrogant. And right up until the time that the general manager, a fellow named Jack Fisher, great fellow, called me into his office. He said, "Scott, we're going to replace you with this guy, and we're going to replace that guy with this guy." And I said, "Well, Jack, what exactly does that mean for me?" He said, "We're moving you into the casino. You'll love it." And I go, "I don't want to work at a casino. I've never wanted to work at a casino." He said, his response was, "Well, that's why we're not asking." So I
love that.
You know, drafted into it.
You were drafted. You had no choice.
No.
Your career path is interesting because it really, your career path chose you. You never chose your career path. I mean, literally, every step of the way, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's why we're not asking. I love that.
And, you know,
funny.
Truthfully, and, you know, and I have to say, at the end of the day, you know, obviously, you know, by he and by extension, those that made that determination to move me, they were right. In fact, I found it suited my personality so well. I just absolutely loved the vibe, the energy, the people. I found, you know, judging a book by its cover was, you know, exactly what I did about the folks, the good people at work in the industry and the amount of effort that they put into it, their craft and their skills. And you know, a lot of people take that for granted because it looks a lot different from the other side of the table, which is what I was basing my assumptions on. So it was a very humbling experience for me, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and which leads us to, you know, kind of this next thing that we were talking about earlier, that you've always talked about social IQ, right?
Oh, yes.
And that's what we were talking about. This job kind of fit your personality. And one of the things I'd asked you was, you know, how do you get to your level? What kind of qualities do you need?
Well, you know, and it's exactly that. It has to be social IQ. And you have to have a good grasp of the skill sets. And, you know, but the ability to communicate is, you know, invaluable. You know, and being comfortable and communicating. And it was hard, I'm telling you. I was as uneducated as you can get. And, you know, I ended up, you know, emancipating myself and finishing high school on my own and going through the University of Nevada, Reno, and, you know, God bless them, and that training and education that they gave me. But it takes a long time. It did for me, I should say. A long time before I was comfortable, you know, interacting with the, you know, at the executive level, you know, then the public speaking, the terror of doing that. And I have to tell you, one of the most terrifying moments I've ever experienced in my career arc was, and I had been in senior management already. So, you know, but one of the things that terrorized me the most was the first time I had to deal blackjack, you know, at a live game. I mean, it was absolutely unnerving, and it's one of those experiences that you never forget. If you've had that experience, I guarantee you, it's something that you will never forget. And you know, that truthfully, that was more terrifying than public speaking. And you know, in my initiation, that was, you know, we had an awards. Boomtown had an annual awards ceremony for all of its employees. And it was one of those things that you know, you want promotions, but you really don't know all of the duties and responsibilities until you're actually doing the job. And I wanted to become the manager and I wanted to become the director. And then what I found out is, oh, you have to give this award speech, you know, to 600 people. I've never spoken in a room with, you know, 20 people before. So, you know, it was okay the first year. It went reasonably well because I still, you know, consumed adult beverages. So I managed to get through that experience. But the second year, it was like Mickey Mouse giving the presentation. I couldn't get rid of that high pitch and the sheer terror I was feeling. But you know, you just have to acclimate. And so, you know, the skills that you need, I think you have to earn. Nobody gives them to you. You have to, you know, you have to do the public speaking. You have to do the P&L analysis and the data and the conversion from, you know, just raw data to key performance indicators and give explanations comfortably and, you know, have, and I think, you know, one of the most important things to me is you have to have, you know, empathy, you know, for the employees. I, you know, truthfully, I cleaned a lot of toilets over the years, and you know, you got to do what you got to do. And, you know,
Swept
for cigarette butts out in parking lots. I did all of that, you know, washing windows, you know, bumping tires, everything you have to do at a truck stop, and, you know, bussing tables, like, you know.
Everything.
Yeah, you, and how that manifests itself, in my opinion, in the leadership is, you know, you really have to put yourself in the employees' positions and, you know, how, what they're feeling, you know, what the struggles are that they have to deal with, you know, day in and day out. And, you know, I mean, you know, working, you know, front of the house, you know, Friday and Saturday nights at whatever, 9, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night is not for the faint of heart. That's not for everybody, because it is literally can be a war zone out on that floor where, you know, it's mentally fatiguing, it's physically fatiguing, and it takes a while to acclimate to those types of environments, especially, you know, the bigger the facilities.
Yeah, of course. Tell me a little bit of some of the mentors you've had and what they meant to you and what you took away from them.
Well, you know, I had one person at Boomtown. There were a couple, but one guy at Boomtown, and he didn't tell me this, honestly, for 25 years. It wasn't until my retirement or my separation party, my going away party, if you will. He told me, and he was the senior vice president of operations, a fellow named Jim Middaugh. And he said, you know, when you were in high school and you had, you know, you were living alone, you had your own apartment, living by yourself, and, you know, you're obviously underage. He said, I don't know why, but, you know, this, the school district, which was Washoe County and Reno High School, he said, they called me. And he said, I don't know why they routed the call to me. He said, hey, we got this, we have this minor that doesn't have any parent or guardian, and we understand that he works for you. And Jimmy Middaugh said to him, he said, look, he said, you telling me I read about kids dropping out left and right, but we got a kid that works for us that wants to go to school, and you're telling me you're trying to kick him out? That was the end of the call. And, you know, and he said it again, it happened. And I just never realized the stuff people do for you to help you. It's crushingly humble how that makes you feel when you do become aware of it. And it's still extraordinarily impactful for me. The folks that.
That's a great story. I love that story. That's a great story.
Transitioning to the University of Reno. I was extraordinarily lucky to study under, you know, one of the greatest minds of the gaming industry, Professor Bill Eddington, you know, before mm-hmm. he passed away. And, you know, you know, and thank God, pardon me, he was, he helped me a lot. And, you know, when I went back to school, I was there it took me a while to come to the realization that I was there for the education. But if I was going to succeed, I obviously needed a degree if I wanted to control over my own we wanted control over my own destiny, my family and I. And, you know, that was the ticket to do that. And, you know, I went back to the university after 15 years after high school. It was not easy. I had a lot of skull cramps over that.
I can imagine.
That was a very humble experience. So I would say, you know, those couple guys, and certainly, you know, some very impactful, you know, Ernie Stevens, you know, I can't claim him to be a mentor, but I've certainly learned a lot from him.
Yeah, Ernie's a great guy. He's a really cool guy. Yeah, I love Ernie. Tell us a little bit of what where you feel the business is heading right now.
Well, you know, really, you know, it's, you know, there's a lot of buzz about, you know, market saturation and in different areas, and still some, you know, moderate expansion, you know, in California, still some expansion going forward there. You know, the gaming industry, you know, and certainly in Las Vegas, like you and I were talking, you know, just before the show. I mean, you know, there's billions of dollars still getting invested in Las Vegas. So,
oh yeah,
I don't think anyone could argue that you know, probably for from a gaming perspective, the most saturated market on the planet certainly has to be Las Vegas. But that isn't stopping anybody from investing in Nevada and specifically in Las Vegas' future.
No, they're going to bring more people to Vegas because they're going to bring a lot more Asians in.
Yeah.
So, it's going to stimulate growth.
And I think that's a good sign for our industry holistically, you know, coast to coast and border to border. I think there's room for growth. There's definitely room for growth in the, for responsible gaming. And I think the markets actually reflect that. I think there's obviously some soft markets. However, I would say that, I tend to think that it probably, I think there's opportunities even in those markets, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but it wouldn't be the first time, that's for sure. The gaming devices themselves, I think are, they're so cutting edge nowadays and so entertaining, and they're so big. And table games are still, and certainly in this market, which I'm Southwest Louisiana. Louisiana very much a card, a table games market. So I was happy about that. So I think, transitioning, moving into the future is about, how to attract millennials and all that. But I would say I'm not angst over that in the least because, I grew up in Reno and we were having these conversations, in 1980, we were worried about, the baby boomers and what was going to, how they were going to, their behavior moving into the future. And every year, and I think legitimately so, keep an eye on the future is certainly a legitimate concern. And I think the point of this is I think those people on the vendor side of the industry understand that and work to bring, high quality talent in that generation that they're our industry as service providers in the hospitality side of it look to attract. So I don't think we can put the cart before the horse. I think, the gaming industry, the growth of it will continue. And I think the vendor side of it is they're going to continue to provide us operators with products that will attract those different generations that we have expressed some misgivings about moving into the future.
What do you tell young people coming up in the business?
The most important thing in our business, it's your job to protect your job. I've been doing it since 2006. I go into every orientation and I go through a little spiel, and part of that spiel is, the age of, if you ask an employee, why did you do something or this and that, the age of I don't know or or nobody showed me or trained me on that. I tell every orientation group, I said, look, this is not high school. If you don't know how to do something, it's your job to find that something out.
Right.
And it's your job to protect your job. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a privileged industry. I take an affirmative responsibility in protecting my gaming license. In fact, I think the most salient example of that, I worked in Southern California, and I was walking through we were converting a back of the house room into a front of the house room, and I'm walking through the debris. And I was just looking at the construction to see if there were any surprises, any expected expenses that I was going to have to deal with. And, of course, I was by myself and I'm looking around, and I look down in the middle of that, in a middle A pile of debris is a $100 table game check. So I pick it up and I go, oh, I wish I wouldn't have done that. So now I'm holding it like a Petri dish with bubonic plague in it. I walk out to the gaming floor, I look for the table games director, and I go, hey, is this a decommissioned chip that just hasn't been destroyed or what? And he goes, I can't touch that. I go, I know. What am I supposed to do with it? And the point of that is it really doesn't matter what level you're at. if you don't know something, it's your job to find that something out. You know, you got to protect yourself at all times. And,
yep.
I can't emphasize that enough. You know, these, you know, people make silly mistakes, and, you know, it can be harsh. It's a harsh industry. And, you know, I mean, working on Native American, well, not just Native American, working in, you know, you have to declare that. You know, if you lose your, something happens to your gaming license, you have that's the gift that keeps on giving. You're going to have to explain that every job you get after that.
Yeah, that's right. Bob, Scott, let's take some questions. Hang on one sec.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I think we got a lot of people lined up here who want to talk to you, so let me see. Hello, this is Tino Magdana. Do you have questions for Scott?
Oh, great. Scotty, this is Bob Elmo. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Bob Elmo, right?
Long time from Boomtown, huh? Pardon?
Hey, Bob, it has certainly been a long time since Boomtown.
Did you guys work together at Boomtown?
We certainly did.
Wow, that goes back way back.
Yep. I'm at Red Hawk Casino in Sacramento now.
Oh, nice.
So,
Nice.
Yeah, where are you at now?
I'm in Southwest Louisiana, Coushatta Casino and Resort.
Oh, wow, that's the big one, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
I enjoy it.
Who's your main competition there?
You know,
is it the
we are a Native American facility, and we are competing with a couple of corporate entities. One is obviously now is Penn National. They own the Burge, and then El Dorado bought Isla Capri, and then
Golden Nugget against the Bossier market, huh?
Yeah, and for Tita Tillman, you know, he owns the Golden Nugget, so.
Oh, Lake Charles too. Then
I was just saying, Bob. We're right on the periphery of Lake Charles.
Oh, got it. Okay. So you probably see Keith Henson over there.
You know, I called him. He's up in St. Louis. I think.
They moved him, huh?
Yeah. He was down here for 10 years. He was down here for 10 years. Penn moved him up to, it's either St. Louis or Kansas City. I think it's actually Kansas City.
Wow. My question to you what type of marketing do you guys do? Do you do radio, TV, social media, or a lot of direct mail?
Oh, it's primarily a lot of direct mail. Our market is kind of similar to, you know, the Reno market and the feeder market being, you know, 3 to 4 hours away. So, you know, we're dependent on Houston and, getting them and, you know, Coushatta. You know, we got to entice them to drive another 45 minutes past our competitors. So, you know, we have a big place, a lot of rooms, you know, it's a lot of direct mail and it's a lot, you know,
and
you gotta,
I'm sorry, I missed it at the first. How many slots do you have there and table games?
We have just over 2,800 slot machines and just at the, I think the number is 75 table games.
Yeah, so that's not how many hotel rooms.
900.
So you fill those up primarily from Houston.
Oh yes. And we have a full RV park with all of those RV park services as well.
Yeah, well, how many spots in RVs?
Just around 220.
Yep, just about the same size as Boomtown. So you had a little experience there. So how do you like being down there as opposed to the California market?
You know, that's a great question, Bob. And, you know, Tino and I have been talking about that a little bit. I have to tell you, I may get myself into a little bit of hot water, but I had my, that stereotypical image of, the South and I thought I knew what I should expect, but it was an entirely different experience, a very comforting experience. In fact, the people have been so, kind and have extended themselves, where I would be a little bit suspicious about that from Southern California, even some experiences I've had in Reno, but I'd be a little suspicious of that, over the top, good natured, welcoming environment. But the truth of the matter is,
right,
it was extraordinarily genuine, and it has absolutely been a delight for both my wife and I. And it's very, how do I word that? It's very, it made me a lot more optimistic about our side of the business than I've been in a long time. So it was actually a very rejuvenating experience for me.
Great. How many boys do you have?
right at 2,400.
Yeah. So you got that's a nice sized property. And you guys growing or staying about the same year over year?
Actually, one of the reasons that they brought me here, and my MO. I mean, I do a lot of developmental work, and I enjoy the construction side, and I think that they definitively need some rejuvenation with the physical property. The facility needs a makeover from one end of the building to the other, and it's not going to be a small task. It's going to be a very large project, and I think we're probably a couple years out from starting something of that scale. But I think I'm very comfortable with growing the market. I think the others, I know, Isle is owned by El Dorado. I know they're making a significant, have made announced plans to make construct a land-based casino and remove their barge. So that's obviously a significant investment into this market. And I think that Quesada will do well in that market.
And how long have you been
Great.
Down there?
I'm still kind of new. It's only been since June, so about 7+ months.
Yeah, it's just
all
just
right.
Happened. Yeah.
Well, it was great. Talking to you, and thanks for the opportunity to throw some questions at you.
It's great to talk to you, too, Bob. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh,
take care.
You bet.
Really good talking to you.
Thank you.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye. A little bit of a friend from the past, eh?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The way past. Not just the past. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Scott. Do you have any questions for him?
Hi, this is Alicia Lee, the new friend. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad. Thanks, Tino. Thanks so much for having me. Thank you, Golly, again. I really appreciate always being on, invited to ask some questions on this show. Scott, it was great weather this weekend, so I hope you were able to golf a little bit.
No. As much as I wanted to, it's been a very saturated year for the ground here. So it just hasn't played out in my favor yet.
No. Well, I'm sure you'll get a chance again. But I just wanted to ask you a question. I know I had heard you talk today, and it's very interesting to hear more about your story. I know we had a chance to spend a lot of time together, and I got to get bits and pieces of your past and your career advancements. But I want to go more on the mentor side. It was wonderful to hear about your mentor when you were going to school, your mentor at Boomtown, and then later on in life. And so as someone younger in this industry that came from the casino side and now the vendor side, what do you think the most important things to do as far as making those connections with executives like yourself to have wonderful relationships, but then also be able to have them as mentors to learn more and progress their careers?
That's a great question. Thank you. And, you know, I hate to be, you know, so old school, but, you know, the reality of it is, you know, what worked in the people that were my mentors, what worked in that generation, I think will work, you know, it does work moving into the future. And that's, you know, honesty and integrity, you know. You know, there's only one thing I take with me if, you know, thankfully I haven't had to move that frequently, but, you know, my integrity, I can't put a price tag on that. So, and the vendors that I deal with, and sometimes, you know, not all of them want the honesty, if you will, but, you know, I think it's important. I think, you know, I am not the kind of guy that's going to, you know, one thing and do something different. you know, Alicia, that's not me. And,
I
think
that.
That's important. And I think, you know, because I don't expect respect, but I think over time, if, you know, as you, you know, deal with, you know, both sides of the business, you're the empathy with the employees and the honesty with the employees, and certainly with the vendors too. I've had some, the whole range of experiences with vendors, but it's important to me to keep my integrity and deal with the every one of the vendors kind of the same way, and that's with integrity.
So you think that's the best way for us to operate as well going forward? Always, like, as someone younger in the industry, always just make sure you take your integrity, make sure people respect you, and go forward.
Well, you can't make them respect you. That's what my point is. You know,
we'll try to have that
over time, because, you know, truthfully, over time, you know, it's you're going to earn that. That's kind of my point. Is you know, when every property I've ever had to ended up going to, you know, truthfully, this is actually Southwest Louisiana, Coushatta. Was actually the first property I didn't feel like I had to earn their respect. I think every other property you kind of that I've experienced, I've had to earn it. I mean, work it. And here, it was just different. And there was an expectation that, you know, that I knew, you know, what this business needed to be successful, and that was different than other experiences I've had in the past.
For sure. Well,
great.
I'm really excited,
fantastic.
Scott. You've made a lot of super positive changes since you've come on board. I'm so excited to try the new Asian restaurant, so I'll be back to visit soon. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Scott, you have a question for him?
Hey, Tino, it's Michael Laffey. How are you?
Hey, Michael, how are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad. I had a question for Scott, that some of the things that keeps us marketing folks up at night is this overexpansion and the market saturation, but he kind of already answered that. So, Scott, I was going to talk to you about kind of a recent phenomenon that we're seeing out there in the last few years. When I started out in this business 20-something years ago as a marketing person, you stayed in the marketing department forever, and that's what you did. And, Tino, you can attest to this a little bit, that we're starting to see marketing directors migrate over into that general manager position and some of the executive operations positions. Is there something happening today that just marketing people was qualified for 20 years ago, or is this just something new? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question, Michael, because the truth is I think it touches a little bit about what was asking about as far as, you know, kind of the skill set you need to be an effective leader in our industry. And it's all about communication, you know, and that, in my opinion, you know, that transparency and to be able that kind of, you know, gift, if you will, of taking extraordinarily complex scenarios and explaining them well. And I think that is an absolute natural for marketing people. I think, the marketing folks that, have done their due diligence with, database analysts and analysis and data mining and converting that to actionable information, whether it's, successful direct mail campaigns or whatever, even robo-dialing, whatever. I think that transition, that stretch, if you will, from that mentality to, that leadership of the whole, kit and caboodle, it's not as big a stretch as it used to be. And I think the other skill sets that are a necessity, overseeing finance and all, I was fortunate in the sense, Michael, that I was not an expert in any one field, but I spent an awful lot of time in a lot of different departments. So, but I think marketing has that tendency to work with all of those other departments too. So I think for the people that work in marketing, and if they're paying attention to the departments that they're working with and understanding not just what those departments are asking for, but why they're asking for it and what results that they're expecting, I think that makes that stretch even easier to go into, senior vice president, general manager, those types of positions.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It seems like today, a marketer's, especially a director's job, is to get involved and know the players just as much as they know the message that they're trying to put out there on TV or direct mail. It's just that connection with the players is not always in your office. It's out on the floor, and out on the floor is where the operations people live. So maybe that's part of that transition thing is we're understanding that relationship with the guest is the ultimate importance right now.
Amen.
Yep. It's great stuff. Did you have another question?
Thanks for your time, guys. No, that was it. I answered it. Thanks, Tino, and we'll see you guys later.
Thanks. Thanks for calling in.
Great questions, Tino.
Yeah, really cool. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Scott?
I certainly have. Good evening, gentlemen. It's Heidi Antizana.
Hey, Heidi, how are you doing?
Oh, I can just see Scott's big smile. That just lights up every room. But it was awesome seeing you just the other day, Scott.
Thank you. It was great to see you, Heidi, and Nick as well.
So very quickly, just anybody that is on the show tonight, is I can vouch for Scott's integrity. He had to present a project on my behalf to the board, and afterwards I phoned the HR director and I said, oh my goodness, how's it going? He says, I got bad news. Scott's moving away from the property. He's resigning, but the good news is he made sure he presented your project before he left, and that just shows this man's integrity. I have to say that.
Oh, that's cool.
They're very nice. Story. Thank you so much.
So one of the questions I had for you tonight was you've been involved in, I think, two expansion projects at this stage of your career. Is that right, Scott?
A lot more than that, but two big ones, yeah.
Okay, two big ones. So what would you say is critical? If you could name one or two things that are critical to ensure that your expansion development project will be successful.
Oh, I think right-sizing for the market. I think, Michael actually touched on it a little bit on his question a little bit earlier about, market saturation. It's hard, like in our side of the operator side of the business, you kind of tend to gravitate towards that Midas mentality where you think everything that you're going to touch turns to gold.
Right.
And and maybe become a little bit too dependent on, market feasibility studies and the optimism of that. I would say right-sizing for the market is probably the most important component. And everywhere I've ever worked, every project that I've ever done, that is my affirmative responsibility. And where I'm very comfortable interacting with the architects to keep it reasonable, the general contractors to keep the materials reasonable, and the owner's representative to ensure that the interests of that entity are what's top of mind for everybody on the project. So right-sizing to the operation and, you know, successfully interacting and holding people accountable for the budget.
Right, right. And a second question I had, and this I thought about really carefully. So if you had to start in Indian gaming today, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
What would I do differently?
It doesn't have to just be Indian gaming. It could be any. It could be all gaming.
No. I get it. Well, I tell you, one thing that I wish I would have done earlier is I wish it wouldn't have taken me 15 years to go back to school.
Yeah. I love that.
I wish I would have done that lot sooner. So if I was, you know, if the environment was different and I was just coming out of, you know, whatever, high school or whatever, and I want, you know, or just turned 21, I would be committed to that education, because what I realized is after all the interactions I've had and all the people I've dealt with, you know, that I've been fortunate enough to deal with, it really does come down to, you know, taking control over your personal destiny. And Haiti, you're a great teacher for that, is taking control over your look, your personal presentation. And part of that is going to be confidence. And I think a lot of that is derived from, in my mind, you know, your comfort with your education and your comfort in your own skin. So, and I think, you know, so I really do. And I know that I don't mean to be evasive about, you know, what would I do in 2019, but I definitely wish I would have went back to school sooner.
No, absolutely. Right. I get it. And I'm sure a public speaking course at the age of 14 would have done you really well, too, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Thank you. That was a great answer. Thank you. And have a good evening. Thanks, Tino.
Thank you, Haiti. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
That was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. Really like Haiti.
Hello, this is Tino Magdana. We have Scott on the line. You have a question for him?
Yeah, hi, Tino. This is Bobby from Las Vegas.
Hey, Bobby, how are you? Good to hear you.
Yeah, it's great to be on with you. Terrific guest as always. Hey, Scott, you used the word very early. Hi. You used the word very early in this conversation that I am guessing has a whole lot to do with the great success you've had over a great period of time, and that word was empathy. And you talked about empathy for your employees, and I wonder if you could expand a bit on how relationships with your guests and empathy there through your marketing side and empathy on the operation side with your employees comes into play.
Yeah, that's a great question, Bobby, and because, you know, part of that social IQ is I'm very much convinced that, there's definitively a lack of, you know, true caring about people. And I was really, really fortunate to work at Boomtown when I did. You know, there was times when, you know, I wasn't second guessed about decisions that I made. And, you know, if you heard earlier, I was drafted in the gaming, and, you know, I remember going out on table games and, you know, people that were, in my mind, overserved. And I'd tell them, look, I go, hey, we're going to be here tomorrow. You can come out. You know, we're done. You're done for tonight. I'm happy to walk into your room. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're not looking to hurt anybody here. You know, we want you to have a good time. I'd cut them off and, you know, take them to their rooms. And, you know, and, you know, so having that kind of honest dialogue, I'll tell you one experience that I did catch a little flack for was, I remember a couple, and they were older than I was. And, they had gone into our steakhouse and had a bad experience. And they were telling me all about, and let me tell you in excruciating detail. And I said, you know what?
here's the thing. I said, you know what? You go into town and go to any place you want to eat and just bring me the bill back. I said, you don't have to waste your time explaining to me how bad the service was. I get it. I'm sorry. Nothing I can say is going to help it make it any better. But, you know, go in and get yourself a good meal and just bring me the check back and I'll pay for it. And they did. And I don't think those people ever forgot that. I know I certainly haven't. And
yeah, it's cool.
And I think, you know, Bobby, I think the other direction, if you will, is, you know, it's awful easy for us, especially like the Native American country. And certainly I was guilty of it in corporate when I worked there for 25 years, critiquing the people that were the leadership and, you know, second guessing all of their decisions. But it was a whole new world when I stepped into those shoes and realized, you know, how challenging that was. I'll never, like my example about public speaking, you know, I was happy to criticize the manager and the director I worked for. And when I found out that they had to do, it almost brought me to, I almost didn't take the job. It scared the hell out of me. You know, I mean, and then, you know, and I felt that I still feel that today for, you know, tribal councils. I don't think people really understand how tough it is to do that job, to be accountable every day for every tribal member in your, you know, on your reservation and be accountable to them. And I know it's the same in Las Vegas, you know, it's, you know, those people have a lot more pressure to deal with and a lot more results centric than the average bear. And that, those are very humbling lessons to learn. And having that empathy, I think, you know, going upwards and sideways and for all of the employees, I think it's the cornerstone of my success, truthfully.
Yeah, it's great, great stuff.
I'll bet it is. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Scott, it's been a great interview. Thanks for being on the show. You were absolutely fantastic. And, you know, I want you to come back on sometime.
And, Tino, thank you so much and all your previous your guests. You know, I learned a lot from, you know, Conrad and certainly from, you know, John and, you know, all of the great people that you bring on the show. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Tino. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right, that was great. Scott, very interesting story, and what a journey he had. And basically, fate found him, and he got into the business. Thursday, I have Lisa Miles, and she's going to be on our show. She's an amazing lady. She has a great story to tell, and she's from Lucky Eagle Casino. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good night, and we'll see you Thursday.